This is BPN Radio, your 24-hour internet prayer station, calling America to pray. It's time now for the Christian War Room with your host, Michael Schonborn. Now, here's Michael.
Thank you, Dale, for this lovely introduction. And today we have got a very special talk here in the Christian War Room. Okay, are we going to sort of make a very kind of strange start? Let me just talk about something, and it's something which is actually quite shocking. And anyway, we're just going to start off with this. And I'm going to make a start with the United States national debt. Okay, I've got the figures here. And the U.S. national debt is, and it depends, there's a website called usdebtclock.org. Now, the national debt, as it stands now, so we are looking at the 7th of March, just to give you the date when this talk was made, is 20 trillion, almost 20, just short of 21 trillion U.S. dollars. Okay, so again, just to give you an idea what these figures are. So we've got $1 million. You can probably still relate to that. Then we've got billions of dollars. So 1,000 million is 1 billion, and 1,000 billion is 1 trillion, and we've got almost 21 of those. Yeah. It sounds an awful lot per citizen. It's a debt of $63,000. So if the debt should be cancelled, they could pretty much raid all your property. So that means, you know, the way the state has run the economy for many, many years. So it's not just something that started now. They pretty much spent all you have. I would imagine the average U.S. citizen, if you would look for $63,000, some have got a lot more. Most of them haven't got that many assets to pay for that, and very few would be able to actually pay it. Yeah. It goes further, debt per taxpayer. So when you look at the taxpayer, so those who actually contribute to the system, that would be $172,000. Yeah. Okay, now it gets even more bizarre. Yeah. Now the debt, who owes the debt, or who is the debt owed to? And it's just a group of private bankers. Yeah. Woodrow Wilson, he has instituted the National Reserve, the U.S. National Reserve Bank, or the Federal Reserve Bank, which is not state-owned. And if it were state-owned, it wouldn't be really a problem because it would just be, you know, the state would own its own debt. But it's just a group of private bankers who can produce money out of thin air. And, yeah, and you have to pay it back to them with interest, and that's where the debt is going to. The other very interesting things, when you look at the tax revenue per year, it's only about about $1.6 trillion, and that's all. You know, that's the tax revenue. So, if there was no spending going on, it would take about 20 odd years to pay for that. Okay, but let's look at these astronomical figures. What these figures really mean. So, because we've got no idea of what this means. So let's imagine that every second in your life you would pay $1 to counter this debt, to pay for this debt. Just every second in your life, providing there's no more interest going on, but it's rising all the time at quite a rate. Anyway, I give you a moment to think about how many years it would take to pay this debt. You know, if every second you pay $1. Every second in your life, you pay $1. And let's see, you know, whether by the end of your life, you would go anywhere near being able to pay this debt. Okay, so I run the figures, and it comes up to 634,000 years. Yeah? It's quite crazy, isn't it? So if you just pay $1 a minute, a second, not a minute, a second, it would take you 634,000 years to pay for this. So you can imagine how crazy this debt is. Now, obviously, we are looking at America, and we are looking at, you know, I think it's about 400 million people now, 340 or something, quite a huge number of people in the United States of America. And obviously, when we look at the average debt per taxpayer, it's 172,000. They could actually take all your property away and everything you have, give it to the bankers, and the debt would be paid for. So you could turn the nation into a slave nation. Okay, I'm not going to spend too much time talking about this, and that's not the Christian War Room. It's just a system that is slightly flawed, or maybe majorly flawed, which happened with Woodrow Wilson to sign away the right of the state to produce money to a bunch of private people who now control all the money in the United States of America. Okay. Anyway, just remember this figure, 20 trillion or 21 trillion takes about 634,000 years to pay it back if you pay back a dollar every second. So that's about $60 a minute. Yeah, that would be quite a nice wage if you were be able to make that sort of money. And then an hour would be 400 and... Am I getting it right? No, $360 an hour. So it's a lot. And obviously, you have to be have a very good job to make that sort of money to be able to pay this back in 634,000 years. So that's almost like half a million years. It's crazy, absolutely crazy. Okay, now let's look at some other figures. Yeah. And the figures I'm looking for is, let's have a look, the human body. And it's just a guesstimate or an estimate. They don't really know. Obviously, nobody's ever counted them. So the question is, how many cells are in the human body? And the estimates go from 37.2 trillion, 37.2 trillion cells in the human body, to 70 trillion. There's a lower estimate, which is at 15 trillion. So that's just a little bit less than the national debt of the United States. That's the number of cells which are in your body. And depending if you go on the higher figure, 70 trillion, it depends on how big you are, you know, whether you've got a lot of fat cells in your body. So if you are a weightier person like myself, you would have more cells in your body than somebody who is just a bundle of bones. So we've got somewhere between 15 trillion and 70 trillion cells in your bodies. And so this number is so big, again, if you were to count each cell, one cell a second, it would take you somewhere in the order of 634 or maybe even more, 34,000 years, yeah, to count them. Yeah, that's counting one cell each second. It gives you an idea how wonderfully we are made and how great we are made. And you can use the national debt of the United States to just illustrate how great the human body is and the amount of wisdom, the amount of creating power has gone into this to create the human body and to have a baby grow up in how many years, maybe 20 years, from a tiny cell, yeah, to a body that has got 70 trillion cells, just to give you an idea. Yeah? And again, it's an estimate because if you counted them, even if you counted them one a second, it would take you pretty much half an eternity, which is a bit of an oxymoron, but half an eternity to count them. That's how long it would take you. Okay, what do we find in the cells, in each cell of our body? And I'm not going to sort of give you a number of the genes, but it's going to be a similar number of genes in each cell. And again, there's a bit of a guesstimate going on. But I tell you what is in each cell, and we know this today. There's either going to be an XX chromosome or an XY chromosome. One says you are a woman, and the other one says you are a man. Okay? So, even if you take the lower estimate, about 15 trillion cells in your body declare that you're either a man and a woman. Okay. There's there are two kind of anomalies which are in there. One is called the Turner syndrome, where a woman has only got one X chromosome. But normally, if a human being is born with just one X chromosome, they develop as a woman, and there's a high chance that they are infertile. And then there's another, this is called Klinefelter syndrome, and it's again, it's an anomaly in the chromosome set. And if somebody's got a Klinefelter syndrome, that means that person has got an XXY cell configuration in the chromosome set, but that person will normally develop as a man, yeah? So we've got this male or female thing going on. and pretty much every cell in your body times, you know, 15 trillion to 70 trillion tells you that you are a man or woman. Okay, what's happening now in our generation? Now, people come across and they say, no, you know, this is all just a social concept. It's a social, you know, people are forcing this on you. You know, you need to decide what gender you are. And, yeah, you may choose to be a woman, even though there are 70 trillion cells in your body telling you or telling the world that you are a man. Yeah? But if you feel in your head you are a woman, then we need to align your body to be a woman. So this is pretty much what the world is telling us today, and it's all, in my opinion, pretty mad. It goes further. There are a couple of things going on. One of them is in Belgium. There was in Belgium, they've got the thing, if people go for a sex change, they can only be recognized as a woman, as a man, once the genitalia are removed on all of them. So that means they become infertile. And only then, at that point, can they register as a woman after the appropriate surgery. Now, one man refused to have his genitalia removed, but he was a transvestite or whatever he was. And he went to court, and he wanted to press to be recognized as a woman. And so you've got this bizarre situation that, I'm not sure what happened with the court case, whether it ever came through or not. I just heard it on the news and never heard of it again. So there was just this case going on. So presuming in our crazy politically correct age that this man was given the right by the courts to declare himself to be a woman, we've got this bizarre situation that this woman, man, creature, whatever you want to call it, could father a child. So you've got a woman, theoretically, you know, legally, legal status, if this has gone through, who could father a child. Yeah, and that is pretty mad. That is pretty mad, to say the least. Yeah, and again, it's pretty mad anyway, because every cell in this person's body declares this person to be a man, and you can multiply this either by 15 trillion or 70 trillion times. Yeah. So it's all crazy. So the only way to try and get these people to look like a woman, behave like a woman, and have some features as a woman is to shoot them up with estrogen. Or, you know, put them under hormone blockers to sort of try and get sort of some resemblance of a woman, or vice versa, a woman like a man. Okay, we've got another issue as well. I've read this on the news, Russian news today, and the Labour Party, again, it's all the madness of political correctness. So the Labour Party in the UK has decided that people who are transgendered, yeah, who have gone through the op and everything else and are legally considered to be a woman, can go for the quota system, the women quota in the party. And there are some so-called TERFs, and they are trans-exclusionary radical feminists. So even some of the feminists, you know, the ultra-politically correct radical feminists, they say they don't want this because they think, hey, what's going on here? You know, there's a bloke who, you know, has got some gender change, and now he's taking our guaranteed jobs in the Labour Party, and so they're making a big fuss about it, and they are, you know, threatening to walk out of the Labour Party and all sorts of other stuff. Just to remind you, the Labour Party is pretty much the equivalent of the Democrat Party in the United States. So we've got a big problem on our hands with all this transgenderism, and it's a big question of how this moves on and what is going on in this society. It is pretty mad. Okay, we've got a talk now coming up, and again, it's all stuff for the Christian War Room about this issue, and we're going to pick up this issue in the next talk as well, which should be tomorrow after the weekend. Okay, let's listen.
It's been reported in Vanity Fair that Jenner has taken hormones to grow breasts, as well as hair removal and facial surgery. As to whether Jenner has been gelded, well, that's anyone's guess, as this information has yet to be revealed. This is Jewel Shuping. She's had a fascination with blindness that started in childhood. She would stare at the sun after learning it would damage her eyes, and by 18 she was wearing dark glasses and walking with a cane. Her desire to lose her sight was so strong that she decided to blind herself. by having a sympathetic psychologist pour drain cleaner in her eyes. Experts diagnosed her with body integrity identity disorder. Dr. Michael First, the expert who coined the term, said that in the world of psychiatry, cures are rare. Very often, it's about asking how you can make someone's life fulfilling despite their condition. This is Nano, a Norwegian woman that claims she realized she was a cat when she was 16 years old and has adopted feline mannerisms ever since. When asked if she was born as the wrong species, she said yes. Nano prefers to crawl around on her hands and knees and paws at windows when she wants to go outside. And also she said that despite her size, she can sleep in the sink or on windowsills. This is Stephanie Wolscht, who lived as a man named Paul until he realized he was transgender at the age of 46. He left his wife and 7 children to live as a transgendered 6-year-old named Stephanie. After 2 suicide attempts and a bout of homelessness, he found hope in the transgender community in Toronto. He now resides with an adoptive mommy and daddy and spends his time playing with dolls and the couple's young grandchildren. So what is the difference between these 4 people? Well, obviously a person that intentionally blinds herself and another who believes that she's a cat in a human body would generally be considered mentally ill. But in contrast, the contemporary controlled media and through osmosis and fear of being called transphobic, Caitlin and Stephanie are both brave, strong, independent women that need to be congratulated for finding the courage to transition. And especially Stephanie, who not only lives as a transgender, but also as a 6-year-old girl. Transgender is the T in LGBT and are lumped in with lesbians, gays, and bisexuals. While the L's, G's, and B's communities are mostly concerned with where they put their genitals, the T's are generally concerned with wanting to remove and or change theirs. I understand that many see transgender as the last frontier in social justice, and the very concept mobilizes legions of the vacuous at university campuses across the United States. Now, those of you listening and grinding your teeth at my intolerance and basking in your own self-righteous, congratulatory, progressive indignation, hear me out, which I understand will be hard. The concept of a trans community is the problem here. You can't satisfy a community defined by an identity of mental illness except by indulging it. There can be no trans community any more than there can be a community of anorexics or people that cut themselves or the depressed and manic. You can have a community of the afflicted, of sufferers looking to overcome their illness. But if you indulge a mental illness as an identity, all you're doing is propagating the illness. And being transgender is a mental illness. Dr. Paul McHugh, who is currently Distinguished Service Professor of Psychiatry and former Chief Psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins Hospital, has said that sex changes were biologically impossible and that those doctors who promote sexual reassignment surgery are collaborating with and promoting a mental disorder. Dr. McHugh, who is the author of 6 books and at least 125 peer-reviewed medical articles, made his remarks in an article in the Wall Street Journal titled "Transgender Surgery Isn't the Solution." He explained that transgender surgery is not the solution for people who suffer a disorder of assumption, the notion that their maleness or femaleness is different than what nature assigned to them biologically. While the Obama administration, Hollywood, and major media such as Time magazine promote transgenderism as normal, said Dr. McHugh, these policymakers and media are doing no favors either to the public or the transgendered by treating their confusions as a right in need of defending rather than a mental disorder that deserves understanding, treatment, and prevention. Dr. McHugh also pointed out studies from Vanderbilt University and London's Portman Clinic of children who expressed transgender feelings, but for whom, over time, 70 to 80%, in fact, spontaneously lost those feelings. McHugh's views are backed by studies from across the world. For example, a 2011 study from Sweden, which was a long-term follow-up of transsexuals who had underwent sex reassignment surgery, came to pretty much the same conclusions, that post-op transsexuals are more than 20 times likely to commit suicide than the general population. The Swedish study, conducted over 30 years, from 1973 to 2003, and consisted of all 324 sex reassigned persons, found that persons with transsexualism after sex reassignment have considerably higher risks for mortality, suicidal behavior, and psychiatric morbidity than the general population. Our findings suggest that sex reassignment, although alleviating gender dysphoria, may not suffice as treatment for transsexualism and should inspire improved psychiatric and somatic care after sex reassignment for this patient group. Also echoing the research thus stated are pharmacotherapy studies that are 20 years old that used the drug Pimozide on a cross-dressing man with a strong wish to undergo a sex change. The outcome of the study, as far as I know, has never been mentioned in the mainstream media, or at least I've never heard about it between the cacophony of how Caitlyn Jenner is so brave and so beautiful. But there was an excellent response to Pimozide 2 milligrams daily with a cessation of both cross-dressing and the wish for sex reassignment. When, after 1 year, the dose was reduced to 1 milligram daily, there was a rapid return of the cross-dressing and the wish for sex reassignment. An increase in the dose again led to a remission, which has been maintained since then. And the conclusion was that pharmacotherapy with Pimozide should be considered in cases of doubtful gender dysphoria. But in all reality, this is one of those cases where you don't really need to appeal to scientific authority, as it's clear even enough to a layman to come to these conclusions. The real controversy, as I see it, lies with people that try to proselytize to the masses on the virtue, dignity, and right for individuals to choose the life of a transgender. This issue has become such that even transgendered people will now be allowed to compete in the 2016 Olympics without surgery, meaning that women with male genitalia will be allowed to compete against women with their original plumbing. And now, even the US has joined most other NATO member countries and allows the transgendered to serve openly in the military. House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi supported the elimination of rules that ban transgendered people from openly serving in the military, as she believes there is no place for discrimination in the U.S. Armed Forces, including on the basis of gender identity. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter overturned the ban on transgenders openly serving, despite the suggestion that transgender people may have mental deficiencies and be at risk for suicide. The fawning of the transgender has even become a cause to celebrate in children. One young male-to-female transgender girl, Jazz Jennings, even has his own television show at 14. And this is dangerous for kids that are having gender identity issues, as they see the media and social justice circus, as well as the unique snowflake label and attention that being transgender brings, and they may take the very real and very permanent body solution to a temporary and treatable mental illness. The American pediatrics colleges are now weighing in on the controlled media, social justice advocacy groups, and even President Obama, as they zealously champion the transgender rights for children and their push to normalize mental illness in the name of tolerance, acceptance, and diversity. On the 21st of March, 2016, a temporary statement with references was released by the colleges, pending a full statement that will be published in summer 2016. The American College of Pediatricians urges educators and legislators to reject all policies that condition children to accept as normal a life of chemical and surgical impersonation of the opposite sex. facts, not ideology, determine reality. This statement asserts human sexuality is an objective binary trait. No one is born with a gender, only biological sex. That a person's belief that he or she is something they are not is at best a sign of confused thinking. The use of puberty blockers can have serious negative health effects, and that conditioning children into believing a lifetime of chemical and surgical impersonation of the opposite sex is normal and healthful is child abuse. The story of teenager Rhea Cooper is especially tragic, as at 18 he's Britain's youngest sex reassignment patient. Formerly known as Brad, and after 2 years of hormone injections, he developed breasts, dresses in glamorous outfits, and has dated several young men. Yet despite thousands of pounds worth of National Health Service treatments, as well as psychiatric and doctor's assessments, Rhea has now decided he wants to go back to being a boy. And this decision comes after 2 suicide attempts. And while 18 may seem young, there are examples in Germany of children as young as 12 going under the knife and being allowed to transition between sexes. At this point in the presentation, if anyone is still clapping at the bravery and demanding transgender people have a right to sex reassignment surgery, I encourage you to visit the website sexchangeregret.com. It's filled with heartbreaking stories from people who have transitioned and might help you understand why suicide rates among these people are so astronomical. And if you still think that people are transphobic for not being comfortable with these procedures, or are so firm in your progressive credentials to even attempt to reconsider your ideology, then it might not be that you are a champion of human rights, but a blind automaton lacking empathy and a heart, and choosing ideology over reality. How is handing an alcoholic a bottle of gin humane? How is handing a drug addict an 8-ball of coke humane? How is giving these people expensive surgeries and hormones that further corrupt their already troubled minds humane? Real treatment is possible, but it involves treating the problem, not agreeing with the mental patient and everyone pretending that the voices are real. The key is to treat transgenderism as a mental illness and not to indulge it. You wouldn't hold a coke and sex orgy for somebody suffering from mania. You wouldn't hold a live-action role-playing game event for somebody in psychosis. You wouldn't hold a comedy roast for somebody in the grips of clinical depression. The same is for gender disorders. Don't indulge the mental illness by offering the quote-unquote cure of a transition or the possibility of identifying as your non-biological gender. Recognize it as the self-harm, as I said in the beginning of this presentation, as society does with anorexics or people that cut themselves. In fact, gelding a man to help him with his mental illness is like giving people with suicidal tendencies but are seeking help a gun, a pen, and a piece of paper to write their goodbyes.
I hope you enjoyed this talk. We're going to pick it up tomorrow on this subject. I think it's very, very important that the church is dealing with this subject. We really need to get to terms with this, and we're going to carry on with this talk tomorrow. You're listening to The War Room on Seismic Radio on BPN Radio.
For the past half hour, you've been listening to The Christian War Room with host Michael Sean Bourne. For more information on how you can participate or find out more about The Christian War Room, simply go to ChristianWarRoom.com. That's ChristianWarRoom.com.